nightmare creature. Once again, Aru found herself missing Boo big time. He'd know what to do. At the very least, his constant stream of insults would help distract her. Focus, Shaw. Aru tugged her hair. Think, think, think. But brains are uncooperative. At that moment, the only thing running through her head was the tagline of a commercial for acne cream. Don't pop and poke. Try Dr. Poke's. Pop and poke, she sang in an off-key, slightly panicked voice. She reached beside her for the arrow. Her hand hit cold stone. Arrow! She turned, scanning the cave floor. But there was nothing around her but wet rocks. The memory flashed painfully in her head. She had left the arrow behind when she fled the burning forest. Around her, the cave began to warm up. Steam wafted off the creek. A cloud of fireflies appeared at the mouth of the cave. The heat became harsher, the light brighter. Aru clawed at her throat. It was getting harder to breathe. Aru had no arrow, no athletic prowess, no hope. She started nervously scratching at her neck and felt something cold there. The monsoon pendant. Monsoon had said it would hit any target. But what exactly was she supposed to aim at? If you aim true, you'll escape this illusion. But how could she escape an illusion when it didn't exist? It's not like I can escape my head, she said, tugging her hair. Wait, that wasn't entirely true, was it? She had escaped her own head, lots of times. Aru thought back to every time she'd woken up from a bad dream. She would bolt upright, shot straight out of a nightmare just by remembering what it was. A nightmare. All of her nightmares were the same. She dreamed about coming home and finding the apartment empty, cleaned out. Her mother hadn't even bothered to leave a note saying goodbye. Aru had that nightmare whenever her mom left for business trips. But even when her nightmares seemed so real, down to the scratchy carpet of their apartment that would always be caked with dust, they were nothing more than flimsy images shot through with fear. That was the real thing. The feeling. Everything else was a lie. The flames licked closer. Light and heat splashed across her face. She closed her eyes and let go of Monsoon's pendant. She could feel in her bones that pretending like this whole thing was real wasn't the right thing to do. This time, no acne commercial flickered through her thoughts. Instead, she recalled the story of Arjuna and the fish's eye. In the tale, the archery teacher of the Pandavas had tied a wooden fish to a tree branch. He instructed the brothers to shoot an arrow at the fish's eye, but they could only aim by looking at the reflection of the wooden fish in the water below them. The teacher asked Yudhisthira, the oldest brother, what he saw in the reflection. He said, "The sky, the tree, the fish." The teacher told him not to shoot. He asked Bhima, the second oldest brother, what he saw. He said, "The branch of the tree, the fish." The teacher asked him not to shoot. And then the teacher asked Arjuna what he saw. He said, "The eye of the fish." Only he was allowed to shoot. It was a tale about focusing, about peeling away distractions one by one until all that was left was the target, the eye of the fish. The flames touched Aru's feet. She grimaced but didn't move. She closed her eyes. The bow and arrow were only distractions. The real way out had always been in her mind. She pictured Minnie and the museum, her mother and the memories. She pictured Boo's feathery chest puffed out in pride. She pictured the red blinking light of Burton Prater's phone. She pictured freedom. It wasn't an all of a sudden thing. She wasn't yanked from one place to the next. She didn't open her eyes and see a new world where there had been an old one. Instead, she felt something like a latch unclasping inside her. People are a lot like magical pockets. They're far bigger on the inside than they appear to be on the outside. And it was that way with Aru. She found a place deep within her that had been hidden until now. It was a place of silence that seemed deafening. It was a feeling of narrowness turned vast, as if she could hide small worlds within her. This was what escape was, discovering a part of herself that no one else could find. Aru reached. She imagined a door to the other world with a tether of light wrapped around its handle. She grabbed onto that tether and pulled. In that moment, she could no longer feel the flames. She could no longer hear the buzzing of cruel insect wings. She heard only her heartbeat pounding against the silence. She saw only her dreams of freedom turning bright and wild, like a rainbow glimpsed through a prism. And in that moment, she escaped. 28. The Palace's Story. When Aru opened her eyes, she was standing once more in the decrepit palace hall. Minnie was a couple feet away from her, furiously arguing with herself? Two Minnies? One of them was getting increasingly red in the face and hunching her shoulders. The other pushed her glasses up her nose and kept talking. Her! Aru would have bet money that version was the real Minnie. Aru tried to run forward, but she was kept back by some kind of invisible barrier. Hey! Called Aru, pounding her fists against the air. Minnie! But the Minnies kept right on arguing. The real one said, And so it stands to reason that the fastest thing in the world is not a person or a creature, but a thought. The other Minnie let out a horrible groan, as if she'd just gotten attacked by a headache, and vanished. The remaining Minnie braced her hands on her knees and took a deep breath. The invisible barrier must have disappeared, too, because Minnie finally noticed Aru. A grin stretched wide across her face. You're alive! So are you, shouted Aru, running toward her. But no sooner were they next to each other than the palace roared to life. Torches flamed on. Even the roof pulled itself up, like someone adjusting his suspenders. The two of them braced themselves. Aru wrapped her hand around the glowing ball in her pocket. Minnie gripped her compact. The palace shuddered.
Only Yudhisthira would have been able to outreason himself through wisdom, it said.
Aru dropped her voice to a whisper. Seriously? Your task was to annoy yourself? Minnie scowled.
And only Arjuna, continued the palace, would have had the vision and perception to escape the mind's own fear. Which means it's you! It really is you!
Duh, said Aru. We told you that when we got... But the moment Aru started speaking, the ceiling split above their heads. Rain gushed in from the cracks in the roof. The whole palace rolled.
I,
the beams creaked,
thought...
The foundation whined.
You,
the roof caved in.
Forgot!
The floor tiles beneath them split.
About!
The walls peeled back.
Me!
The rain was a waterfall now. There was nothing for Aru and Minnie to do except clutch each other as the palace broke apart around them. When the crying and rain finally stopped, the walls pulled themselves back together. The roof dried its shingles and stitched itself whole again. The foundation rolled one last time, as if heaving a sigh. The palace had a right to be upset. They had forgotten all about it. But was that really their fault?
I missed you, said the palace. For 300 years after you left, I kept the floors polished and the ceilings free of dust. I kept the larders full and I watered the plants. But you never returned.
Did I do something wrong?
No, of course not, said Minnie. She looked as though she wanted to drop to her knees and embrace the entire palace as if it were a sad giant dog. We're not really the people we once were, tried Aru. We don't even remember anything about that life. Otherwise we would have visited. Moments later, the floor started to gleam. The fire in the torches turned from harsh to warm. Paintings that had been hidden behind layers of skeleton dust glowed with color.
And yet you must leave again?
Asked the palace. There was a plaintive note to its voice, like a pet who really didn't want you to go and was convinced that if she were on her best behavior, you might change your mind. We don't have a choice, said Minnie. You know that. Trickles of silver liquid ran down the walls.
I know, said the palace. This time, I won't forget to polish the floors.
Don't go to the trouble, started Minnie. Aru jumped in. Yes, please do that, thank you, she said, and make sure you do a good job. Aru knew better than anyone that the worst part about being left behind was the wait. Whenever her mom left on business trips, Aru always cleaned the apartment from top to bottom. Sometimes she even went to the farmer's market so that there would be bright apples on the table instead of thick gray books, like representations of the feminine in ancient Hindu sculpture. Every time her mom came home, Aru would stand off to the side, chest puffed out like a blue jay, waiting for her to notice. Sometimes she did, and sometimes she didn't. Not knowing how her mom would react was what made Aru do it all over again the next time. And so she understood how the house must have felt.
Excellent! Shouted the palace.
All at once, chandeliers dropped from the ceiling. Crystal bowls of light pink ice cream floated into Minnie's and Aru's hands.
Please, coaxed the house. Just a bite. You can eat and walk at the same time. I'll make sure you don't trip. Or would you rather skate? You liked to do that once upon a time.
The ground beneath them turned to ice, and their sandals were replaced with pretty metal shoes with blades on the bottom. Aru took a bite of the ice cream. It melted on her tongue and left behind the delicate flavor of rose. I'm not very good at skating, said Aru. Can we travel any way we want?
It is limited only by your imagination, said the palace.
One step later, they were zooming through the halls. Aru grinned. Imagine having a home like this. A home that knew what you wanted and leaped to answer. A home that grew carousels made of bits of stars and petals and let her gallop on a horse made of dandelion fluff while she balanced a bowl of ice cream in one hand. A home with a floating bed and books that knew when to flip the pages so you didn't have to get up from your pillow or move your hand. But this wasn't home. Her home was small and littered with books she didn't understand. The apartment had cracks in the walls and old plumbing. There was always straw on the floor from the wooden crates the statues were shipped in. Her home had her mother. The palace, as always, could read her thoughts. It sighed again.
You must be on your way. And what kind of home would I be if I pampered you and kept you back?
Minnie blushed. She had been bicycling through the air, ice cream in her hand, and a book floating in front of her face. You're right, she said. She wiped her mouth and set aside the rest of the ice cream. Aru finished hers so quickly she got brain freeze. The palace enchanted a hand towel to wrap around her head. Thanks, she mumbled, hoping that the palace understood she was trying to say thanks. Unexplored rooms hovered around them, promising rich histories and secrets. Aru caught a glimpse of a chamber full of glass birds. A serpent slithered out of a hole in a wall, its scales fashioned of rivers and seas.
Down a long hallway, Aru saw the skyline of a distant city. Part of her longed to explore, but she knew she couldn't. Even without looking at her hand, Aru could feel the number on her palm as if it were searing her skin. They had 2 days left. They couldn't waste time. The dandelion horse, recognizing her unspoken wish, set her down gently. Within moments, they were at the rear exit of the palace.
"Here we are," said the palace mournfully. "I'm sorry about the, you know, death threats, trials, and such. I do hope you can forgive me. I didn't realize that it was you."
"We forgive you," said Minnie. "I would have done the same if I were a palace," added Aru graciously. The palace beamed. Silver lights burst from the ceiling and drifted down like glittering confetti.
"I have a present for you as you continue on your journey," said the palace shyly.
"What is it?"
"Just a trifle,"
it said.
"Something you might keep in your pocket and remember me by, should you not be able to visit me again."
Aru and Minnie held out their hands. In the center of their palms appeared a little blue tile shaped like a 5-pointed star.
"This is a piece of home," said the palace. "It will provide you with rest and shelter when you are in need. Granted, it cannot create an arena or training grounds like I can, but it can give you the part of me that matters most. Protection."
Aru curled her fingers around the tile, grinning. "Thank you, palace. It's perfect. I hope we won't need to use it, but I'm glad we have it all the same," said Minnie. More silver confetti rained in a happy shower from the ceiling.
"Glad to be of service," said the palace. "That is all I ever wanted."
"Palace, what lies beyond this kingdom?" asked Minnie. "We need to get to the hall where they keep the celestial weapons."
"Ah, you need a map," said the palace excitedly.
"But maybe not one of those big road maps, though," said Aru. "More like a pamphlet? Something small?" She had trouble reading maps, and she had even more trouble folding them up when she was done. "Follow the lines," her mom used to scold, but there were so many lines.
"Ah, yes, of course. How efficient you are, my princess. How noble and precise are your manners,"
creaked the palace.
"Alas, I have failed you once more."
The walls cried silver rivulets again.
"I have no pamphlet and cannot procure you such a thing, because I do not know what that is. However, I can tell you that what lies beyond is a place of sadness. For you see, it is the bridge of forgetting. Only there might you find what you are seeking with the weapons. There is a reason why I have not disappeared. I am not yet forgotten. But I reside in the kingdom of death because I am not considered true. I am myth. One day, perhaps, I too will cross the bridge of forgetting, like so many other stories before me."
Aru braced herself for more tears and rain, but the palace seemed oddly at peace with this statement.
"It is better, perhaps, to be thought of as a fiction than to be discarded from memory completely. If it is not too much to ask, would you think of me fondly every now and again?"
The torches sputtered.
"It makes a difference to me to know that every now and again I am remembered."
Aru and Minnie promised. Aru didn't know how to embrace a palace, so she did the next best thing. She planted a kiss on her palm and pressed it to the wall. The palace shuddered happily. Minnie did the same.
"Goodbye, goodbye, Pandavas. Do great things. Make good choices," said the palace.
The door swung shut.
"And if you must forget me, at least do it with a smile."
29. The Bridge of Forgetting. Once they had closed the door to the Palace of Illusions, a winding road stretched out before them. The sky was black, but it wasn't nighttime. It was the flat darkness of a room with the lights off. Here, in the middle of myth and the bridge of forgetting, the landscape was different. Statues were half-sunken into the earth. Tall white trees blocked their view of what lay ahead. "I'm starving," Aru moaned. "I shouldn't have eaten that ice cream so fast. Do you have any more Oreos?" "Nope. I gave the last one to Boo." At the mention of their pigeon friend, Minnie sighed and wiped at her eyes. "Do you think he's okay?" Aru wasn't sure. The last time they'd seen him, he'd been knocked unconscious. That automatically said not okay. "Even if he isn't okay right now," she told Minnie, "we're going to rescue him, and then he'll definitely be okay." "I hope so." 2 minutes later, Aru's stomach grumbling had gone from a smattering of sound to giant growling, "There's a monster in my belly and it wants to eat you" noises. She pulled out the glowing ball and poked it. "Was it edible?"
"Borborygmi," said Minnie.
"Borbor what? Who's a pygmy?"
"Your stomach sounds. They're called borborygmi."
"Did you get that from the wisdom cookie?"
"Nope. Medical textbook."
"Minnie, why were you reading a medical textbook?"
"I like to."
She shrugged.
"Bodies are so cool. Did you know that more than half of us is made of water?"
"Yippee," said Aru. "Are we there yet?"
"How am I supposed to know?"
"Well, you're the one who ate the wisdom cookie."
"Like I said," said Minnie, clearly annoyed. "It only makes you wise until the thing you're asking wisdom for is done."
"Technically, we're not done. We're still questing or whatever through this place. Honestly, what's the point of making us go through all this? Don't the gods want the world to be saved quickly? This journey is more useless than a unicorn's horn." Minnie looked highly affronted.
"What do you mean, useless? It wouldn't be a unicorn without a horn. That's what the word means. Uni for one, and then corn for, you know, horn. One-horned."
"Yeah, but they're supposed to be all peaceful and nice. Why would a unicorn need a horn? What's it do with it?" Minnie turned red.
"I don't know. For shooting off magic and stuff."
"Or they use it to maul things."
"That's horrible, Aru. They're unicorns. They're perfect."
"Maybe that's just what they want you to think." She personally did not trust anything that had a built-in weapon and claimed not to use it. Yeah, right.
"It's so cold all of a sudden," said Minnie.
She was right. The temperature had dropped. Well, not dropped so much as fallen off a cliff and tumbled straight down. Aru's long-suffering Spider-Man pajamas did little to protect her. The wind blew through the cloth, chilling her skin. "Imagine having to live in a place like this," she said through chattering teeth. "You'd have to pick your nose all the time just so that your boogers wouldn't freeze into icicles and stab the inside of your nose."
"Gross!"
The air felt tight, not that stifled staleness of the palace. It reminded Aru of how sometimes in winter it hurt to breathe because the air had become overly sharp and thin.
"Aru, look, it's snowing!"
Aru craned her neck and saw blue-bellied clouds drifting above them. In slow spirals, white flurries fell to the ground. A single white flake landed on her palm. It looked like a snowflake, down to the delicate lacework of ice. But it didn't feel like snow, even though it was cold. It felt like a pinch. Beside her, Minnie winced. The snow, or whatever it was beginning to fall harder. Now the flakes were hitting the ground. They didn't melt. As Aru watched the snow, she spotted a tall tree with hundreds of tiny mirrors for bark. Something slipped behind the trunk. A figure, pale and slim, with a cloud of frosted hair. But when she blinked, she couldn't remember what she had seen.
Aru! Called Minnie.
She didn't respond, not because she hadn't heard, but because she hadn't realized Minnie was talking to her. For a second, she had forgotten that Aru was her name. Panicking, Aru tried to rub the snowflakes off her arm and shake them out of her hair. Something about it was making her lose track of things she should remember. It wasn't like snow at all. It was like salt thrown on a slug, slowly dissolving what you were.
"Is it such a bad thing, children, to forget?"
asked a voice from somewhere in front of them.
"If you never remember, you never grow old. Innocence keeps you ageless and blameless. People are rarely punished for deeds they cannot recall."
Aru looked up. The snowflakes now hung suspended in the air, 1,000 white droplets. A man parted the droplets as if they were a giant beaded curtain. He was beautiful. Not movie star handsome, which was something else. This was a distant, unearthly beauty. The way you could watch a thunderstorm brewing across the ocean and find it lovely. The man was tall and dark-skinned, his hair a shock of silver. His eyes were like blue chips of ice. His jacket and pants were an unnaturally bright shade of white.
"I'm sorry, did you say something?" Minnie asked him. "If you did, I can't remember."
"Ah, forgive me," said the man.
He laughed. He waved his hand, and the snowy particles lifted off the girl's skin and hair. Bits of knowledge thudded back into Aru's head. Only now did she remember her favorite color, green, her favorite dessert, tiramisu, and her name. How could she have forgotten those things? Aru found that very scary, because it meant she wouldn't know when something had been stolen from her.
"My name is Shukra. I am the guardian of the Bridge of Forgetting. It is rare that I talk to living beings. You see, I do not venture often beyond my bridge."
Aru couldn't remember a single story about him, but that made sense, given who he was. And no wonder he never left. Imagine how rough that would be at parties. "Who are you again?" "I'm Shukra. Don't you remember?" "Right, right. So, who are you?" As Shukra walked toward them, Aru noticed that there were 5 mirrors floating around him, one over his head, one below his feet, one on his right, and one on his left. Another floated at chest level, high enough that he would only need to tilt his chin down to see his reflection. Was this normal for beautiful people? In Madame B's salon, the whole place had been covered in reflective surfaces. Aru wondered whether mirrors just conveniently flocked to pretty people like sheep. Behind Shukra, the land dropped off into a cliff. The snow, or whatever it was, clung to the outline of an invisible bridge. If Aru and Minnie could cross that, they'd be well on their way to the place where the celestial weapons were kept.
"I've already forgotten my manners once," said Shukra silkily. "I would be remiss to do so twice. Pray, what are your names, children? Your full names, please."
Aru felt a tickle at the back of her throat, as if her name was trying to escape. She didn't want to say it, but it was like she couldn't help herself.
"Yamini," said Minnie.
"Arundhati," said Aru.
It was weird to utter it aloud. She only heard her full name once a year, when teachers called roll on the first day and stumbled over the pronunciation. Arundhati? Arundhati? Arahati? Aru, she would say. Just Aru. Usually one of her classmates would howl in the background, pretending to be a wolf calling to the night, "Aru!" In first grade, Aru had tried to go along with it by leaping out of her chair and barking. She'd been sent home.
"Lovely names. They will be beautiful ornaments for my bridge.
said Shukra, examining his fingernails.
So can we go across? Asked Aru.
Of course. He smiled. He may have been handsome, but his teeth were terrifying. They were black, crooked, and filed to points.
But to those who wish to cross the bridge of forgetting, I always offer a choice. And I will offer the same to you. First, will you hear my tale, daughters of the gods?
How did you know we were the daughters of gods? Minnie asked.
You reek of it, said Shukra, not unkindly.
Aru discreetly sniffed her armpits. Still good. She mentally high-fived herself.
The scent of godhood does not lurk in the pits of humans, hissed Shukra.
Oh.
The scent of godhood lies in the burdens that hover above you. Pungent and powerful stenches they are, he said. Each of you has a past, present, and future that was robbed from you. I, too, was robbed. Hear my tale. Then you can decide if you still wish to cross the bridge of forgetting.
Two chairs made of ice swiveled out of the ground, and Shukra gestured for them to sit down. Aru didn't really want to, but the chair didn't care. Every time she stepped away, it slid a little closer, finally tripping her so she fell into the seat. The chair was so cold it burned her skin. Beside her, Minnie's teeth chattered. Shukra eyed himself in one of his five mirrors.
Do you know why I'm cursed to be forgotten?
He asked.
Run in with a bad demon? Guessed Aru. Minnie glared at her.
If only it were that simple, said Shukra.
Aru really wanted to kick the chair and get out of here. Shukra seemed even more dangerous than the dogs that had guarded the entrance to the Kingdom of Death. There was something too quiet about him, as if he knew he'd already won and was just taking his time.
I killed the one person who could stand to look at me.
Stand to look at him? It wasn't like he was hard on the eyes.
My wife, said Shukra. She loved me, and so I killed her.
30. The Tale of Shukra.
It was said that when I was born, the sun was so revolted it went into hiding for a full month. Scars riddled my skin. My smile was gruesome. But though I was ugly, I was a good king. Beloved, even. What I could not perfect in my body, I tried to perfect in my mind. For many years, I was ashamed to show myself to my subjects. I chose to rule from the shadows, but I could not wed in darkness. When my bride first looked upon me, her smile never wavered. She held her palm to my cheek and said, "Our love is what will make us beautiful." And so it did. The changes in my appearance were small, so small that at first I did not recognize them, for I was not used to gazing at myself in the mirror. 4 years passed, and by then her love had made me more handsome. And my wife? She was resplendent. The moon stayed out longer just to gaze upon her. The sun lingered to witness her grace. I no longer had the kind of ugly face that incited horror or pity. But now I was made unremarkable by my passing good looks. I wanted more. I started noting the changes in my appearance each day. My wife assured me that as our love grew, so would our beauty. For her, beauty went hand in hand with joy. I grew impatient. I installed mirrors everywhere, even in the floors. I made checklists by which I might daily appraise my altering visage. I was continually discarding my clothes and trying new outfits. I neglected my people. I began to shun my wife. Every time I saw her, I was filled with fury. Why should she grow more beautiful than I? She, who had so much beauty to begin with. One day I confronted her. "Do you still love me?" I asked. she did not meet my gaze. How can I love someone I no longer know? You have changed, my king. I would have loved you until time itself had ended. Perhaps I still could, if you would only... But I did not hear beyond her first words. I do not remember doing what I did. It was only when the red had cleared from my eyes that I saw her corpse. I tried to tear at my skin, to burn every trace of her love, my ill-gotten beauty, from my body. But it was too late. I could not escape her love, so freely given, even in her final moments. I smashed every mirror, broke every window, drained every pond. And yet I could not escape the truth of what I had been given and what I had lost.
When Shukra finished speaking, tears ran down his cheeks.
Now I live surrounded by the memory of my mistakes,
he said, gesturing at the mirrors that accompanied him.
Without these, the snow would steal my memories as it does for all who visit here.
I'm sorry, said Minnie softly. Aru said nothing. Part of her did pity him, but the other part was disgusted. He'd killed someone who loved him, someone who had given him a special gift. He was selfish. Shukra brought his hands closer together.
It is time for you to make your choice. Should you not succeed in crossing the bridge, you will fall into one of the fires of hell and be forced into the next life.
You mean we'll die? Asked Minnie.
Oh, yes, said Shukra,
waving his hand as if Minnie had asked something as casual as, do you have chocolate ice cream? How do we succeed? Asked Aru.
To cross the Bridge of Forgetting, you must pay the toll.
And that is? Asked Aru.
You must sacrifice a part of yourself. Your memories. Give them to me and leave lighter. As you can see, only the outline of the bridge is visible. Your memories are needed to form the rest of the bridge.
Our memories? Repeated Minnie. Why would you want that?
So I will not be alone.
All of them? Asked Minnie. Can I just give you all the bad ones? Last week, my backpack strap got caught in an escalator and...
All of them, interrupted Shukra.
Why do you even bother staying here? Asked Aru. Why not just go on to the next life? You could be free of all...
Free?
Shukra laughed.
Where is the freedom, little ones, in moving on to the next life? He said. Do you not know that these things chase you past the doors of death? The ills of one life will affect you in the next.
There it was. Karma. That idea Aru just couldn't wrap her head around. What goes around comes around and all that maybe nonsense. Aru thought it seemed like a scaredy-cat thing to do. Decide not to move on just because it was bound to be hard. To her, it didn't make much sense for him to stay here. All alone, forever. She stood up. Minnie had a more difficult time. Her chair seemed to have grown fond of her and kept trying to twine around her legs. Do we get our memories back once we cross the bridge? Asked Aru.
No.
Aru's hands formed twin fists at her side. Then you're not getting any memories from me. Or, ouch, get off, said Minnie, finally freeing herself from the chair. It made a soft whining sound. Me neither.
That is a pity, said Shukra. For you could have always made new ones.
He glanced at each of the mirrors that pressed close to him. They weren't supposed to remind him of beauty at all, realized Aru. They were supposed to remind him of pain. Loss. And he had no choice but to see it every single day.
If you insist, I will let you die. Go ahead and try to cross, he said. You will fail.
They scooted past Shukra and were soon standing at the edge of the cliff. They could still see the outline of the bridge ahead, but a foot away from their feet, there was nothing but a steep drop. No platform, no step, no anything. Was the bridge invisible? Was it even solid?
The bridge will build itself, said Shukra.
He hadn't moved from his spot.
The question is, can you cross it quickly enough? Judging by your ages, I doubt you'll make it farther than a few steps. You have had fewer memories than most.
The memory-stealing snow, which had been suspended in the air, began to fall again. This time, when the snow landed on Aru, it stung. Because it was taking. With every flake, another memory was ripped from her. There, gone in a flash, the memory of her 8th birthday when her mother... Her mother did something. Something she could no longer recall.
I offered you help, said Shukra. A life of weightlessness, free of pain. But you rejected my proposition.
The bridge was slowly cobbled together with the girl's stolen memories. Aru lost the taste of chocolate. It was one of her most favorite things in the world. And yet she couldn't for the life of her remember how it tasted. Or even how you spelled... Spelled what? What had she been thinking about? Beside her, Minnie was tugging at her hair. Stop this! She cried. Aru reached for the golden ball. But why she did, she wasn't sure. It's not as if it had ever done much more than glow. It wasn't like Minnie's compact that could see through illusions or make some of its own. And now she couldn't even remember where she'd gotten the ball in the first place.
You cannot escape pain in life, said Shukra. For that, I am sorry. I wanted to grant you a different ending, to let you leave without pain.
The snowfall grew faster and heavier. Aru could barely see through it. She turned to look at Shukra, and she noticed something. The snow was landing everywhere except on him. Her eyes narrowed. Something about Shukra's mirrors must be protecting him. At that moment, a snowflake stamped her arm. Once, Atlanta had gotten 2 inches of snow, so naturally the city had gone into a panic and shut down. Her mother's flight out had been canceled, and they'd spent the whole day inside, snuggled together on the couch. They'd eaten ramen while watching a Bollywood film where everyone got fake slapped at least once, and the beloved memory vanished. Aru could feel the hole it left behind in her heart, and even though she couldn't remember it now, she wanted to weep. Those memories were everything. They were what she held close when she had to spend a night without her mother at home. They were what she returned to whenever she was scared. She couldn't lose them. She needed to loosen Shukra's control of the memory-stealing snow.
The snow is hungry, said Shukra. It will feed.
He turned his back to them, walking farther and farther away, as if he couldn't bear to see what would happen next. But Aru had a plan. Minnie grabbed her around the wrist. No, Aru! Her eyes were wide, and Aru knew that Minnie had guessed what she was going to do. There has to be some other way! If we don't break his mirrors, we won't remember anything, Minnie. It's not right. He has those mirrors because he feels bad. He killed his wife. Why should I feel sorry for him? Aru, he's in pain. If we take from him, then we're no better. Fine. I'll take from him so that we can survive. Aru didn't wait for Minnie to answer. She had to act now. Around her neck, the gray pendant from Monsoon was cold and wet. Even as she reached for it, she remembered Monsoon's words. But be warned. Regret will always follow. It is the price of aiming true. For sometimes when we take the deadliest aim, we are nothing if not reckless. Aru didn't hesitate. She threw.
Minnie turned away as if she couldn't witness this. The stone struck the mirror in front of Shukra's chest. He shuddered, clutching his heart.
Ursa?
He called. He stumbled forward, clawing at the air as if he'd suddenly gone blind. The pendant bounced, shattering the mirror above him. Then it broke the third and the fourth. Shukra fell to his knees. The snow seemed to notice him then. It stopped falling on Aru and Minnie, perhaps drawn by how much more potent his memories were.
No, he screamed. Please! They are all I have left of her.
But the snow showed no mercy. Aru couldn't watch. The bridge, said Minnie softly. When Aru turned around, she saw that the bridge was being built more quickly now. Each moment stolen from Shukra's life was fashioning a sturdy step over the ravine. Aru and Minnie leaped across it, Shukra's screams and cries chasing them all the way. No snow followed them. When they reached the other side, Aru turned to see Shukra looking lost. Snow frosted his skin.
You are merely a child, and children are sometimes the cruelest of all. You have taken everything from me. For that, I curse you, daughter of Indra, said Shukra.
He held out his hand.
My curse is that in the moment when it matters most, you too shall forget.
With that, Shukra disappeared. Where he had once stood, now there were just two footprints gradually filling with snow. 31. This place smells funky. Aru was no stranger to curses. It's just that she was usually the giver and not the receiver. In the sixth grade, Aru had cursed Carol Yang. It was during a week when Aru had been suffering from a cold. Jordan Smith had used up all the tissues, giving himself pretend boobs, which was not nearly as funny as he'd thought it would be. And it was the worst for Aru, who'd really needed to blow her nose. The teacher wouldn't excuse her to go to the bathroom, so Aru had been left with that horrible, tickly feeling of a drippy nose, and she'd had no other choice. Carol Yang had shouted, "Gross! Aru Shah just used her sleeve to wipe her nose!" Everyone had started laughing. For the rest of the day, Carol had thrown balled-up toilet paper at the back of her head. After school, Aru had gone home and cut out a picture of old-looking text from one of the museum's pamphlets. She'd burned the edges of the photo with the stove flame to make it look even more antique. The next day, right before homeroom, Aru had gone up to Carol and held the paper in her face. "I curse you, Carol Yang! From this day forth, you'll always have a runny nose. Every time you look in the mirror and think you don't have a booger, one is going to appear, and everyone will see it except you." And then Aru had hissed, "Kachori, Bajri no Rotlo, Meti nu Shak, Undiu." In actuality, those words weren't a curse at all. They were just the names of various Gujarati dishes. But Carol Yang did not know that. Neither did their homeroom teacher, who had walked in to find Carol holding a tissue to her nose and crying. Aru had been sent home with a note from the principal. "Please tell your daughter to refrain from cursing her classmates." Ever since, Aru hadn't had a high opinion of curses. She'd thought they would function like gifts. It's the thought that counts. But both of those things were lies. Thoughts weren't powerful enough by themselves, and the curse hadn't worked. But this time was all wrong. Behind them, the bridge of forgetting looked like a crescent of ivory. Every memory that had forged it had been stolen from Shukra. She thought she heard the sleeper's voice. "Oh, Aru, 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 what have you done?" But it wasn't the sleeper. It was Minnie. She touched Aru's wrist lightly. "What did you do, Aru?"
I saved us. Her voice wobbled. I got us across the bridge so that we could get the weapons and save the world. This was true. And true things were supposed to feel clean, unquestionably good. But she didn't feel good. Shukra had given up his life form, and a curse had followed Aru over the bridge. She was allegedly a hero. Was this how heroes felt? Knotted up with doubt? Minnie's face softened. It's okay. When this is over, we'll get the curse removed. I bet they've got places for that in the Night Bazaar. Or we can ask Boo? At least Minnie was optimistic. Aru forced herself to smile. She tried to push the curse from her thoughts. Yeah, that's it. Good idea, Minnie. People do that with tattoos all the time. There's a girl at my school whose sister got a butterfly put on her lower back during spring break, and her parents took her out of school for a week to get it zapped off. Minnie wrinkled her nose. Why would anyone want a butterfly permanently on their skin? Butterflies are creepy. Their tongues are weird. And did you know that if tattoo needles are contaminated and not properly sterilized, you can get hepatitis? And let me guess, you die? Well, you can get treated, said Minnie. But you could die. Aru rolled her eyes. Come on, we must be getting close. Chitragupta had said that the celestial weapons were past the bridge, but there was nothing in sight except a giant cave. The cave was so tall, it seemed less like a cave and more like a ravine through a mountain range. Pale stalactites dripped down from the ceiling, jagged and sharp, and crowded so tightly that they reminded her of teeth. And then there was the smell. Aru almost gagged. It was worse than that time she had forgotten the groceries in the back seat of her mom's Honda. The whole car had smelled so bad. Her mom had been forced to leave the windows open all weekend. This place smelled like rotting. She stepped on something that crunched. Aru looked down to see a slender fish spine stuck to her shoe. She peeled it off and flung it into the cave. It landed with an echoing splat. This floor is weird, said Minnie. It was firm but springy, like a mattress, and it wasn't gray or brown like the floor of most caves, but a cherry red so deep it glinted black. It smells awful in here, said Aru. She held her shirt over her nose and mouth as they walked. Almost everything she had seen that had anything to do with the gods and goddesses was lavish and beautiful. But this place looked like a prison. The walls were a wet shade of pink. Every now and again, a gust of hot wind brought the stench of rotting fish. Maybe the weapons are rotting? They can't rot. They're celestial. How do you know? Demanded Minnie. Are you an expert in all things celestial? Aru was going to answer, but she tripped and stumbled. A slender, shining silver thread stretched across the ravine, and the moment she touched it, it triggered something deep in the large cave. Neon words now dangled from the stalactite. The Chamber of the Astras. Astra meant weapon. Specifically ones that had supernatural abilities. Aru's pulse raced. She knew she wasn't supposed to be excited about needing a highly magical and highly powerful weapon, because that just meant your enemy was also highly magical and highly powerful. But she still wanted to see it. She would have wanted to take a selfie with it if her mom hadn't refused to buy her a phone. Why wouldn't the gods keep their weapons with them? Minnie asked. What if they got stolen or something? Aru looked around this dark place. Above them, the stalactites cast a light so stingy that Aru couldn't see much of what lay ahead. Maybe they figured they were safe here? But there's no protection, Minnie said archly. It's just a smelly cave. That makes no sense. Maybe the smell is what's protecting it? Maybe you're right. Definitely smells like demon repellent.
Aru frowned. For a room that was supposed to be full of celestial weapons, it was decidedly empty of weapons.
Hey, there's something on the floor, said Minnie. She crouched, pressing her palm to the ground. Ugh, it's wet. More of that weird, smelly water stuff.
And then Minnie was quiet for a minute.
Aru?
Aru heard Minnie but didn't turn. The ball turned warm in her pocket, but she didn't take it out. She was distracted by the dangling words. Before, they had spelled out, "The Chamber of the Astras." But now the words had elongated and changed. She stepped closer to read it. Answers hide in plain sight. Things aren't as they seem. There's power to find here, and knowledge to glean. But time waits for no man, and time has no ears. If you don't move quickly, you'll meet all your fears.
Did you see this sign? Demanded Aru. It talks about men, but what about women? Rude.
Minnie ignored her.
Aru, this moisture isn't some weird humidity.
So?
So I think that it's...
Another hot gust of air blew at them. Deep within the cave, she heard a bellowing sound, like a gigantic pipe organ breaking apart. Or... lungs drawing in air. The ground trembled. Above them, the stalactites began to grow larger. Aru squinted. Not larger. Closer.
Those aren't stalactites, said Minnie.
Aru had a sneaking suspicion she already knew what Minnie was going to say.
They were teeth.
And whatever beast they had stumbled into was beginning to close its mouth.
32. Number 1 on Minnie's top 10 ways I don't want to die list. Death by halitosis. Aru had lost count of how many times she thought we're going to die. Granted, they'd always managed to wriggle their way out of dying before, but that didn't make the thought any less terrifying. Thankfully, by now, the two of them had had so much practice that they didn't scream and cry like the last couple of times. This time, they only screamed. Beneath them, the tongue, gross, began to shake and quiver. Several stalactites, nope, thought Aru, giant teeth, crashed and fell, swallowing up the entrance.
There has to be another exit, shouted Aru. Try using the ball?
Aru drew it out of her pocket and threw it on the ground, but nothing happened. Then again, nothing ever happened with her stupid ball.
Minnie opened and closed her compact. My mirror isn't working either. It's just showing my face.
She frowned.
Is that another zit? Aru, do you see anything? Focus, Minnie. Maybe we can prop its jaws open or something? With what? We don't have anything big enough. Besides, look.
Minnie pulled back her sleeve and bent her arm.
What the heck are you doing? Flexing my muscles.
I don't see anything.
Exactly,
said Minnie, tugging her hair. She started pacing.
Okay, we're in a body. Most likely, given the fish breath, it's some kind of giant demonic whale. So, let's think about anatomy and stuff. Cool, I'll just pull out my pocket anatomy book. Oh, wait, I don't have one. Do whales have uvulas? How am I supposed to know if it's a girl whale? It's the dangly punching bag-looking thing in the back of your throat, said Minnie. It makes you gag. If we could throw something at the whales, then it would have to throw us up.
That was not a bad idea.
except it had a giant flaw. You want to ride out on whale vomit? I just want